We get things rolling like we do every Tuesday afternoon by welcoming to the show our friend, writer, and critic, the talented Colin Fleming. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
I'm just, living the dream, doing what a man does.
I see that you and I are kind of stair buddies today, just a couple sporty guys getting ready to talk some sports by climbing some stairs.
Well, yeah, I went for my morning walk like I always do with the dog in tow, but then it was primary election day here, and our voting place, quite a set of stairs that one has to descend to get down to the floor of the Cross Insurance Center here in town, and they were advising people, go slowly on these stairs, and it was painful. I got behind some folks even older than me, if that's possible. But then when I got done, the stairs were clear, and I ran up the stairs. Not a lot. I don't know how many stairs. Maybe 50 or 60, not that many. And I put this on social media. I was feeling pretty good about myself, and then realized that everybody there was in their 80s.
Nah, man, it still counts. When I leave that matinee performance at Symphony Hall at 1:30 on a Friday afternoon, and people are calling me like sport and like young guy and stuff like that because they all have the walkers, and I'm bombing out the door back to Mass Ave. Makes me feel spry. Makes me feel good.
Yeah, it reminded me of a few years ago. I was out walking, and the legendary Maine baseball coach and then Husson coach John Winken walked all the time, and he had a very deliberate stride, a lot of arm action in his walk. He was distinctive when you would see him, but also very slow. And I saw him, and I went over and walked with him and chatted for a bit. But then I thought, well, I've got to get home soon, and this could take forever the way he goes. So I said, see you, coach, and I raced on ahead of him at what I considered to be a normal, brisk walking pace and felt really good. And then I thought, I feel good because I just outwalked a 91-year-old man. That's not good.
The average person walks 3 miles per hour. So, there you go.
Yeah, he was even slower than that. But again, yeah, he was 91 and I was not. So, but I take my victories wherever I can get them, Colin.
As we have to, my friend.
Yes, indeed. Well, we're going to talk a little sports today and start with Major League Baseball and what you believe is an incredibly overrated statistic, and that's the strikeout from a pitcher perspective.
I can't handle Dave O'Brien anymore raving about how many strikeouts Chris Sale or whomever happens to have. It's like economics, really, that the more inflated something is, the less value it has. And right now, everyone swings from their rear end, no matter what the count is, what the situation is. It's like you've had some pops and you're out at your softball league and it's like, oh yeah, who is going yard today, baby? That's the approach everyone takes. There's no hit and run. And basically 300 strikeouts now for a pitcher is what 200 strikeouts used to be. You see like Mark Langston and Roger Clemens, these people get the 200 strikeouts. And it was kind of a milestone. But now with everyone swinging like they do, I was watching a game not long ago and Sale had given up 3 runs in 8 innings, which is fine, right? But I would bet that that might be higher than his career ERA. Like, what is that? It's an ERA, like 3-2? I bet you he's somewhere probably around there. But he had struck out so many people, and O'Brien's like, he's so masterful tonight. Well, you know what? He's not really all that masterful. I would rather have a pitcher who can stay in the game longer because they have the low count. An out is an out. It's an out. I'd rather have the ground ball 4-3 off of 2 pitches rather than, oh, is this guy going to get past the sixth? The bullpen's a little shaky. He's up to 93 pitches through 5. I don't know about this.
I agree. In the age of the pitch count, the strikeout is not something I'm sure pitchers should aspire to, even though hitters are all too willing to do it. You look at Aaron Judge, I think, is on a pace this year for somewhere around 230 strikeouts.
They don't care.
No.
It doesn't. It's like batting average. They don't care. And you know what? I think this comes down to kind of the larger idea of measurable. Like when the NFL draft, people don't like to think. They like to be told, like, so-and-so runs a 4.340. And they're like, ooh, I would love to have him in our backfield. Well, you know what? There's something in life called context. And it is through context which we have to work to get to a point of accurate assessment. Now, everyone hates, right, the win statistic for pitchers. I don't think it's a coincidence that the best pitchers of all time always had a favorable winning percentage and didn't have a problem getting the W's. Because when you watch a game, not every out is the same. Not every inning is the same. Not every half inning is the same. You have to read the situation. If your team goes down 4-0 in the first inning because you've given it up as the pitcher, and let's say you get that out of your system, your team rallies to tie it in the bottom of the first, you go out there for the top of the second, that is more of an important inning for you to get through that cleanly than just a normal inning. It's context. The other night, Sale is down 1-0 in the game. You have to pitch to the score. If you're up 7-1 and the bullpen has been taxed lately, you need to pound the zone. It's not about like, oh, I'm going to get cued on the black and strike zone's going to say that I have this, or quest tech or whatever it's called. And it's always situational. Everything in life is situational. This conversation we are having right now is situational. Which school your kids are going to go to is situational. It's no different for wins and losses in baseball. We just become so metric obsessed because we're indolent in our thinking.
I was reading something recently that the argument that people use to devalue the win statistic has its origins in the unbelievably quirky season Elroy Face had the year he went 18-1, mostly out of the bullpen.
Okay, but like Steve Carlton won, what was it, 27 games?
When his team only won, what, 54?
He wins half the game.
Yeah.
And it was funny because no one liked Steve Carlton except really Steve Carlton. And he would come into the clubhouse on the days he was pitching, and he'd go, it's win day, baby, win day. They never won on any other day. And again, it's that notion of context. You see these games, and it's like, all right, Rick Porcello, who's such a front runner, by the way, like his entire season is determined by how he does in his first two starts. If he gets off to a good start, he's probably going to have a good season. If he doesn't, he's going to fight it all year long until the end. It's meaningless. And then he'll go 5-1 in his last six starts. But it's like, we've just fought back. The team has done this. Mookie Betts just did this. You need the 1-2-3 inning. You need the three quick ground balls to second and short. And strikeout. It's also really, you know what? It's boring. It is so boring to watch everyone strike out. And I don't know why we obsess over it, because everyone strikes out. Everyone. Like, if you now K less than 100 times a year, you're like Ty Cobb.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The master,
yeah,
of contact.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Well, let's shift sports and talk a little basketball. And your thoughts, please, on Mr. Kevin Durant.
Oh, he is the human emetic of this sports age. I don't consider him much more of an NBA champion than I am. And he, to me, encapsulates everything that is wrong. It's like Russell Westbrook, right, on his team, averages a triple-double, his last team, two seasons in a row. And I think of it like, okay, it's almost like Westbrook is the junkyard dog. He has a steak, and he goes to the junkyard with you and says, we are going to totally fight for this steak. I'm going to get over here 10 feet this way. You get over there 10 feet that way, and we are both going to go for it. And I am going to just white fang you. I'm going to rip your jugular out. It's going to be unpleasant. Then I'm going to enjoy my steak as you, like, bleed out on the ground. Kevin Durant would be like, you know what? I'm more of a poodle. I have these rich owners, and they went out to a fancy restaurant tonight. They're going to bring me back a steak, and I'm just going to enjoy it in the McMansion. I can't respect someone like that. You have a team that is going to win without you. And they had one of the greatest choke jobs in sports history when they don't win it the season they win 73 games. And it's not like football, even though the 2007 Patriots are so overrated, where it's a one-game type of thing. Anything can happen. If you get beat in the playoffs in the NHL, in the NBA, unless it's the NHL with a hot goalie, if you lose, you lost to a team that's better than you. And so you join a team that is going to win subsequently without you anyway, and it's just like all of these low-pressure shots. Because if you're not hitting your shots that day, four other guys, two of whom are going to be Hall of Famers, are hitting their shots. And what does it really mean? It doesn't mean a lot to me. It's everything that's wrong with the nature of wanting to compete and have that other dog bleed out on the ground of the junkyard.
with that in mind, you say Celtics ought to consider moving on from Kyrie Irving as soon as possible. Why is that?
He's Derrick Rose. He's Penny Hardaway. He has a knee problem. He is right now, I think, 26 years. He's coming up on his age 26 season. He's played 7 seasons in the league. Do you know that he has missed a quarter of his time in the NBA? That's remarkable to me. Your health does not improve as a basketball player as you get into your late 20s, your early 30s. It might stay the same, like LeBron James. If you have a track record of not getting hurt, you probably have a good shot of not getting hurt as you move forward for a while. But you can never assume health. And you certainly can never assume health when a guy misses 25% of his team's games all the time. You can't build with that in a knee problem, with the wear and tear, the stopping and the starting. And then it just bothered me so much that he wasn't on the bench for that Game 7 against his former team. It wasn't his former team of 5 years ago. It was a lot of the same roster from the year before. I'm thinking he's worth anywhere from 1 to 5 points in that game, with saying to someone, hey, when he's in the block, he's going to do this. Or when you get this here in the post, kick it back out for the corner three, and he's this defense, he's not going to rotate. He's not even there. So you have to move him out and go for James. Because James, if he wants to beat Golden State, I can't see that working in Houston, because he won't have the ball enough. I mean, there'll be some sort of revolt there. This would be the place to do it, and I don't think Irving has the temperament to be able to be with James again. I don't think James cares. He'll be with anyone in a situation that's most advantageous to him.
All right, let's move on to the Patriots, a team that you say has gotten, a little cliquey and are turning into millennials. What do you mean by that?
I think Robert Kraft killed this team's post-dynasty short-term future with getting sentimental about the quarterback who is now holding them over the proverbial barrel and thumbing his nose at everything. I see a team that is kind of been like millennialized, really, where they're talking about fun at work and Belichick is too negative. You are paid millions and millions of dollars to play a child's game. Your job isn't supposed to be fun. In fact, for most of us, a job, the number one priority of a job isn't how much fun it is. A lot of times it's just practicality for people to support their family. But I would say the sort of transcendent notion of a job is the meaning it brings to your life and the meaning you in turn endue the lives of others. It's about, as Voltaire would say, cultivating your garden. Like, I don't like what I do. I could make eventually at some point millions of dollars writing and be crowned king artist of the world. I'm not going to enjoy what I do. That's not why I do it. I do it for other people so that they might live better. Here, for sports, you walk into that building, Patriots, Gillette, you're there to win. You're not there to have fun. And Brady with his, oh, I like the power of positive thinking. It's like, you know what? You need to grow up, dude. You live in this sort of fantasy world as it is, this Camelot, and you already have the most charmed life. I could see Brady with the whole Alex Guerrero thing. I wouldn't be surprised, the way people topple now, that someday you might not see Tom Brady in the NFL Hall of Fame, because that expression, pride coming before a fall, I see a level of hubris with this guy who I'm starting to think more and more is probably filthy, and he might have his sort of comeuppance day of judgment where he has a Pete Rose sort of tumble.
Well, he does certainly seem to, I don't think completely, but at least has partially lost that feel for the little guy, and particularly the fans, and knowing the kind of thing they want to hear, because fans tend to be fairly simplistic, and they want you to talk about what an honor it is to play, what a lucky guy you are, and how much you love your team, and then you go back to your simple house with your simple wife and your simple kids.
You wonder how much of it was ever really there.
Right.
Power corrupts. And I don't think people, for instance, in our society who claim to be all about equity are terribly often that much about equity. I think it's like when you go to college for your freshman year and you showed up on Thursday and the team has a home game that first Saturday, and all of a sudden you're in your sweatshirt, and you have your face painted, and it's rah-rah for our side, and you want all the calls. It's not like you were a fan before. It's just that is kind of the prescriptive reality of what you want in that moment. And so when people don't have power, they might behave in a way that makes them look like a strongly moral person. But I think we only know truly often how moral someone is when they have the leverage, when they have the power, and they have their throat on your neck. And he pulled a Brady Bunch-like temper tantrum to get his chief competition out of town. And then when he's out of town, he's like, you know what, team? I don't want to do these off-season workouts. I'm going to go on a yacht, and I'm going to throw a football to another yacht where there's like some prince going deep. And you know what? A guy like that, to me, doesn't seem like a legitimately straight kind of guy.
He's a man of the people, that Tom Brady.
Just like you doing your stairs at Town Hall.
No
right?
question about it. And now every time I race up a set of stairs, I'll be thinking of you, and I will take inspiration from that, Colin.
Oh, when you are in Boston, my friend, get on those yoga pants, because you and I are going up and down that Bunker Hill Monument five times.
I'm going to find my Zubas and crank them out.
All righty.
Thank you, Colin.
All right, I'll see you.
We'll see you next time. Colin Fleming, every Tuesday on Downtown.